Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the July 25 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week can be found online anytime you'd like to listen to on demand at willag.org, WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the week include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, from the Andersons right here in Champaign County, Brian Stark, and Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing. I think I'll start with you, Mr. Stark, about the Andersons and looking forward into the fall. What are the problems that you foresee with a crop that is so variable in your draw area?
I think the biggest thing, Todd, as you look forward to the crop is obviously how much of it gets to physiological maturity and dries down. Could be very reminiscent of 2009, where we had a cool and wet summer even with a normal planting, and the crop really didn't dry down the field. So to me, it's probably more of a drier capacity issue potentially this coming fall than maybe a space issue based on what we see as potential for the size of the crop.
And what will farmers face as they're trying to bring that into you? Because I assume that means you'll shut the elevator down early.
That's a chance that that could happen. Obviously, it's too early to say, but, you know, going back to the analog year of 09, there was days where it became a drier capacity issue. I'm not ready to say that's the case again this year, but that is the potential challenge, that if we don't get a natural dry down the field, there could be some slow receiving hours as we move forward.
This is just one of many problems that producers, Dave Chatterton, have had so far this year. Marketing's not been easy as well, and it's gotten harder, I think, for producers in the last 3 weeks as they were hoping for a continuation of the upward trend in the marketplace, and that just didn't happen either.
Yeah, certainly it's been kind of a little bit of a kick in the gut for many producers, especially those in the Eastern Corn Belt who are looking at a crop that's very far behind, that doesn't have the potential that they would hope. And we've got, even in, you know, Central Illinois, where we have some of the better crops in the Corn Belt, we've got our issues as well. And you've got two very different ends of the spectrum here looking at our crop. We've seen funds liquidate and futures prices come down despite what we're seeing with our crop ratings and what I think the agronomy side of the market would tell you about the crop in the field and the challenges that it faces. When you look at that other side of the spectrum where the capital players, the funds, the big market people, Chicago, New York, etc., they're looking at the data that is provided by the USDA. They're putting that in their models, and they're coming out with a yield number that goes well above, I think, what the agronomy side of the fence or the equation is looking at. And so at some point, and probably sooner rather than later, we're going to have a reconciliation of who's right in that argument and where it goes. Right now, I think the funds who tend to drive our markets one way or another, at least in terms of futures, are looking into a situation saying the longs in the market are somewhat trapped. It hasn't performed for them. Based on what we see, our yields are steady or going up as opposed to going down, and we're not interested in jumping in at this point. So we need to somewhere get to a point where the two of those opinions reconcile and give those players either a reason to come into the market or a reason to stay out as they have.
It appears that the reason will come in the August crop production report, the first crop production report for the year, as it relates to corn and soybeans. Wayne Nelson.
Yeah, Todd, a lot of it. And Dave's right. And computers don't drive around in the car like you and I do and look at the fields. They listen to the numbers that are fed by the government in there like that. And it's going to be a very big thing. One of the things that I don't like, and they've already told us it's going to be included in this, is the corn that was planted on prevent plant acres, they're going to call as planted corn. They can harvest it for silage or something along the way, but I mean, that's going to be included in that number, and it's going to make it look a little bigger. We're also looking at, demand destruction has been the biggest thing we've talked about here lately. What are they going to do as far as pulling stuff back? You know, we're looking at, we probably got to have lower use for ethanol. We're going to have lower feed usage a little bit because we're having some feed wheat problems. And along the way also, I mean, what are we going to say this, what's the yield going to be? We all know that there's a reason we generally don't plant corn in the late second half of June and into July, because it, you know, historically that doesn't yield well. So, and with Brian, oh my God, the problems that we could have. I can remember back in 1974, and that is one real mess. You've got to dry corn and blend it half and half to even get it to run through a dryer. So a lot of problems.
You mentioned demand destruction. Why at current levels would there be demand destruction? What it is what is it about the fundamental structure of the marketplace that has caused it? It doesn't seem like it really should be the cash price at this point.
Oh, yes, it does. If you look, if you're out there, another country, and you look to Brazil, you look to Argentina for corn right now, 30, 40 cents a bushel cheaper. And, you know, last time I went shopping in the grocery store, if there was eggs that were here, they were one price. And, you know, in the other stores, 60 cents a dozen more, I'm going to go to the cheaper eggs. And corn's corn.
Well, too, we're looking at a situation where China in particular is still battling African swine fever, and you just can't force a country to buy grain if they don't need to feed it, and I think that's going to continue to haunt us there. But the August Talk report, I think it's going to be an opportunity in a lifetime. I think you can make 40 cents in a microsecond. I believe that when the USDA, they come through and they put a yield on the crop, it's going to be high. This crop's not far enough long to count kernels. They're going to count stocks and look at a situation that stock's going to put in a good year. I believe that's going to be bearish. But any type of acreage reduction, I think, is going to be bullish. So when those computers come out, hopefully they'll read the bearish news first, be down 20, then read bullish news and be up 20. In a microsecond.
So I hope you're day trading and you have some really fast fingers, Kurt Kimmel, to get that done, because in order to beat that, you have to be ready and probably have to have those in place.
Yeah, correct. You got to have a plan ahead of time and have those orders in place. There's just a ton of moving parts in through here. It's frustrating to let computers dictate the marketplace for the first 2 or 3 minutes of a report.
And that happens, but it always comes back to the fundamentals, and they will drive us right through the fall. When you think about your draw area, and we've talked a little bit about this up front as it relates to drying capacity, but there's probably a good crop and a bad crop in the area, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there is a good crop, and there is potentially an average crop in our area. I mean, we've said all along that the garden spot is a relative term, but East Central Illinois happens to be where your good to excellent is in Illinois, in my opinion, and I think that there is some good potential. The crop looks pretty good. It's just late. I don't think in our area that we're in dire need of a situation where we're going to have a half a crop like we saw in 2012. Not at all. And I think ultimately Mother Nature will have a lot to say about it, but I feel a lot better about the potential of the corn crop than I do about the bean crop today.
What do you hear from the head office and other elevator systems in the Andersons from one side of the Corn Belt to the other? For instance, what does Denison, Iowa, tell you about that crop? What are they saying about the Nebraska crop? And more importantly, what do they say about Ohio and Indiana?
Right. Well, I think you've kind of went in order of where how you classify the size of the crop. I think around our Denison, Iowa facility and out around our facilities in Nebraska, that crop is probably some of the best, followed then by Illinois around the Champaign-Mansfield area. As you work further east, we all know that the southern Michigan, Indiana, Ohio crop is the most challenged, and that's not to anybody's surprise. And that's where you're going to see potentially the weakest yields, in my opinion, along with maybe some of the areas in the northwest part of the Corn Belt as we get into harvest and find out exactly how much we have.
Let me go one more with you about the structure of the cash market and what basis does in these kinds of years, because there will be haves and have-nots, but they'll be located in a lot of places, and corn definitely will have to move to fill enormous gaps in the marketplace.
That's right. And I, you know, quoting an old colleague of mine, the job of the market, the basis specifically, is to move corn from where it isn't to where it is or where it needs to be. And I think basis is going to remain strong in the east, at least moving forward if we have a short crop there. And it, as you go west, that's where you'll start to see a little bit of a dichotomy given the size of their crop. But I'm still of the opinion that the market still doesn't know how big the crop is, and that's why we've seen some ethanol plants in Indiana continue to have a strong bid while others have backed away. And that's, I think Wayne talked about this earlier, demand destruction is really the focal point of where the market is, in my opinion, today. And basis will tell that story, because we've already heard of ethanol plants slowing their grind, potentially stopping. And I think that's where the market and the basis does its work in rationing and preparing for potentially short supply.
On that subject, how should producers prepare themselves for this fall and the marketing process?
Well, I mean, hopefully they've done some preparation along the way, Todd. You've got a number of elements that go into your total P&L per acre. So we, at this point, we have a pretty good handle on crop insurance and where you're at with that piece of the puzzle. We have the fall price options that are still open, but we'll deal with that along the way. Today and this week, we got more information about the market facilitation payments and how those are going to work and when they're going to come out. And we can put that into the hopper. So based on that, producers should be very aware of and reevaluating where their break-evens are, where their profit targets are, and where they think the crop in their area can be and what those numbers should be. They shouldn't be afraid to sell numbers that they feel are appropriate or any kind of pop in this market. As you said, while we've got challenges to the crop size, we've also got challenges on the demand side of the equation. We've already priced ourselves out of the export market for both corn and soybeans versus a number of our competitors, and we're talking about a rally that, you know, got to maybe a dollar in corn, and now we're holding 55 or 60 cents of that gain. We got a dollar 20 in beans. Now we're holding 75 or 80 cents of that. If we get back to the top of those ranges, or certainly if we see some strength before or into the upcoming August 12th crop report, be prepared to act. Take some risk off the table. If you want to re-own the crop, hey, we can do that on paper for a reasonable, you know, amount of money and know what your risk is going to be. But to sit here with your head buried in the sand, I think, is a very poor plan at this point.
Well, Todd, today, two of the major advisors in the country, one of them come out with selling 10% more of new crop corn, and the other was in his second day of a buy signal. So I'm just confused as the main guys out there, advisory services. But I think along the way, what Dave has said is, we're looking here, we've got a very good idea, we know we can count on at least a certain percentage of crop. We don't know, I mean, if you're along enough that we aren't worried about the frost dates, that your corn has pollinated and done stuff, you can feel a lot more comfortable. If you're in the part that hasn't pollinated yet, I'm going to be a little slow on the trigger on adding more to it, because that damaged corn, they aren't going to want to take at the elevator, and it's going to be a big deal.
How do you incorporate what you have left in the bin or in storage in the old crop into this process? Because there will be a whole lot of folks that have a lot of corn left, and they may be thinking, I need to wait this out to fulfill needs in the fall time frame, so that they may have made sales that, you know, they're not sure that they can fulfill at this point.
Well, I'd call Brian up, see if he needs that corn to blend with this frosted corn we're going to see here this fall, bring them test weights up myself. But, no, it's an ongoing good question, because you got some good basis. Depending where you're at, you know, you're in a situation where you can go ahead and move it and take advantage of some higher basis levels and cash in. But the fear is, when we get into mid-August, Brian's going to call you up and say, you want to pay another in charge or not? So I'd try to get stuff marketed here in the next couple of weeks if you're going to do it. If you're going to hang on, you got to hang on in the 1st of September and see how fast this crop comes along.
Frankly, I was rather hoping that Brian would call up and say, we have some early bids, can you deliver?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. I think depending on the transition, you have to think of the end user, and it's still a hand-to-mouth market. I mean, we saw a little bit of panic back in the spring where we thought we were going to lose a bunch of acres, and for the first time in at least 2 or 3 years, we saw end users willing to extend coverage out in the deferred months, and that's a rarity. They've been living hand-to-mouth for quite a few years, and I think now you're going to continue to see that, given the fact we've kind of seen a little bit of a calm down, and nobody's really willing to go out and own in new crop 50 over type basis levels. So look for opportunities. There may be some quick ship opportunities, because we're going to have a late fall. We're going to need needs. There's another month of potential usage from the old crop in September that end users are going to have to cover, and people just need to pay attention to those.
So, as you may have guessed, we are recording outside, and at this point we have a bird. We also have a train full of corn, I'm certain at this point, that's headed south. So there is demand. In particular, the southeast and the export market might be interesting, because this corn crop is so late, and the eastern part of the United States simply won't have the corn to feed some of those areas. Do you think that we will see an import of corn come into the southeast even in the middle of our in the middle of the fall yet?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I think it's certainly possible. When you run the math and look at those numbers, we've already seen some old crop, you know, cargo scheduled to come into the southeast. And as as we've already talked about, it's a west to east type of a flow where we're trying to pull grain away from those areas. And so certainly with the lateness of the crop, with the market that we're seeing in the east, there's the ability for not only, you know, the damage and the problems that we've talked about, but there's also the opportunities of what the quick ship and early premiums may or may not be going forward. So certainly the market is going to be very interesting, and as Kurt, or we'll call him millisecond marketing, has already pointed out, those are triggers that will need to be pulled quickly, and as a producer, or you know, as someone who's marketing grain, need to be prepared for those. And when you see those, be able to act on those. But if you've got a crop that was planted in April or perhaps early May, and you think you can get that crop off early, that should be the first crop you're talking about marketing or delivering. Those basis opportunities should come early. And, you know, we may have ones later on down the road should damage become an issue, but that's certainly something to put into your calculus going forward.
So across the corn belt, this is only half of the problem. The other half of the problem is the soybeans and the market there, potentially. Let's start with the crop and what it looks like, Kurt.
Well, it depends where you're at. It's highly variable. Coming across in 74, I was a little bit more bearish than I was driving across 70 through the southern part of the state. Gosh, you got beans that are only calf high, and you got beans that are not looking too bad in through here. We'll see what the weather brings. August makes beans. We got a long ways to go on beans. You got to remember, short beans can put a lot of pods on if the weather's idea. But as pointed out before, demand's a concern.
Well, Todd, the beans in Illinois, only about half of them were up and growing before the longest day of the year, and we haven't got the regrowing days on those. Closing the canopy on beans is very, very important. And if we can't get that canopy closed, we're going to have trouble with some dry weather coming up here, because we're looking at a lot, 25% or more of the good Midwest area is not going to get the rains that they're going if the weather forecast we have today verifies that way. So, and we're going to, you know, as one guy said, this crop can be summarized in one word. And it blends with it, capital L, capital A, capital T, capital E. It's a late crop, and it's going to have a lot to do with, continuing on. You know, the University of Illinois has looked at a lot of figures and saying, you know, if we can extend the frost date to October 15th or 20th, then we've got a lot better chance of having a good crop and things maturing normally, and Brian will be a whole lot happier. You want to be climbing that leg, poking that so it keeps running and everything along the way. I mean, we are looking at, we need more time to have a good crop. You know, Argentina, by the way, you asked about moving stuff. There's two vessels afloat now with corn and meal.
Yeah, I think the bean situation is probably more concerning for me than corn. It's late, to Wayne's point. We didn't have half the crop growing around the 21st of June, which is the best, longest day of the year to maximize that. I think personally the day or the opportunity for 80, 90 bushel beans in our area is probably sailed. We probably have a good shot at 60 to 70 bushel beans, but a lot of things have to happen with Mother Nature. You know, we've talked about China. We've talked about the need to get a trade deal done. But the bigger concern from a demand standpoint in my mind is African swine fever. I think obviously with that disease, it gets a little bit of a secondary focus when we're talking about tariffs and trying to repair our relationship for a trade deal. But I think Kurt made a good point earlier. If you can't force someone to buy something that they don't need, and that's something that is very concerning here when you talk about a third of their breeding herd being eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Brian. I mean, right now China's got somewhere on the order of 4.7 million bushels of beans on the books that have not shipped for old crop. We've got 6 weeks to ship those beans. If they take them all, we'll hit the USDA export projection for our old crop exports. If they cancel half of them, we won't. When you look forward and look at what we've got on the books going forward, our new crop sales are really in very poor shape. We're looking at a situation where they're 111 million bushels right now at this point this year versus 360 million plus a year ago at this time. So that African swine fever, and you're talking about the biggest consumer by far of soybeans and meal in the world, is going to be an issue for our markets regardless of the size of the bean crop we grow. Acreage is another situation where we've heard of more farmers planting a few more bean acres and going along that will add into the balance sheet, but it's going to be a very tough task to create a bullish balance sheet that sustains a price rally that gets prices well north of $10 for farmers to market at those levels.
So this bean crop is far enough behind that you're all concerned about it, but you're also all concerned about demand. Do we change ending stocks from 2019 to 2020 very much, or how much of a difference do you think we see from one fall to the next?
Well, certainly we're looking for that number to come down just a little bit, but it's an open question, Todd. I mean, yield, we've seen beans perform poorly in the past, be rated with near, you know, at historically low levels such as they are right now, and still come back with good late July, August, and September weather to get trend or above yield. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot going forward as to where that yield will come in. I think the acreage number is also debatable, but at the end of the day, when you've got a billion bushel or type of a carryout that cushions where your production can go, it's very hard to walk your way back into that bullish scenario.
Well, Todd, I'm looking at something different here. I am hoping, like the Dickens, we can get something done with the Chinese so we can sell them pork and beef. They are down on their hog herd. They want meat. They need that. Let's feed our bean meal here. Let's not worry about exporting our beans. Let's process them and do it here. If we can get back into that market, they want the meat. They would love to have it. You know, we've got to give a little bit. They can't lose face in this whole negotiation thing. But let's get back. Let's produce the hogs here. Let's feed the grain here. Let's not worry as much about exports in meat and soybeans, but let's worry about in pork and beef and do it that way.
On that note, USDA and the cattle on feed number, it appears that we're going to start to back down on livestock figures.
Yeah, when you look at the numbers there, there's some ample numbers. Demand's a real key ingredient in through here, and they're going to be having to keep feed consumption pretty good here in the U.S., and that's going to help somewhat take the edge off. But the thing is, I agree wholeheartedly that meat exports is a bright spot. However, though, if you go back to Argentina and Brazil, Argentina is starting up their hog production. We're seeing more pork production now the Southern Hemisphere, so this whole negotiation process needs to move forward and come to agreements so we don't lose that demand.
In that case, the Chinese looking to shorten up their supply chain.
Yeah.
So it's just a shorter route from one place to the other, and that's in their five-year plan over time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the meat consumption exports is probably a good way to go. I think to your point on the earlier question about, you know, demand could be down, and obviously a crop from that perspective, does it really make a change year over year? And I think you could paint a scenario where maybe you take 400 million bushels out of the carryout because of a short crop, even with poor demand. But that's, to Dave's point, it's still not bullish. You're still going to have 500 to 600 million in carryout, and it's hard to paint a picture where bean prices can rally above $10 again.
He says hard to paint a picture where bean prices are above $10. Where do we all want to market soybeans at? And I'll come back to you. At what price should producers think about marketing beans? I suspect they haven't really thought very much about this at all to this point.
They haven't. I think the focus has been, for the better part of 4 months, is taking advantage of the corn price rally. And beans have been secondary in nature. And at some point, they're going to have to address that, especially as you're coming up on a new crop type scenario. But, you know, $9.50 to $9.75 on new crop beans, I think, is going to be about as high as I'm willing to look at right now.
Yeah, I mean, it, again, I think when you see futures move above that $10 mark back towards those highs at $10.40 or $10.50, if we can get between the two of those, I think you need to look at pulling the trigger. I would certainly be looking at pulling the trigger. At this point, maybe the best way to view this is I think beans can go as high as corn can pull them. If we have a bigger issue in the fall where corn starts to rally and we get the funds involved in the market, certainly they're going to hold the corn-bean spreads and there's going to be some play there. But that scenario to hold those levels and sustain them for any amount of time is going to be pretty tough lifting.
I agree with both those guys. I think I would start somewhere around 950. I would hope we could get pulled up to the 10, 1020, 1050, somewhere in that range. But I'll tell you what, I mean, it's really hard to see that happening if we don't get, number one, an agreement with China. Number two, like I say, we've got acre upon acre of beans were planted late. They're still going to produce like wheat beans. They're going to produce 20, 30, 40 bushel. And there's a lot of acres out there. And we've got a big carryover to start with. And boy, you look at the carryout for this year, and it isn't going down, it's going up.
I agree what's been said, but I'd maybe come back and get some cash replacements on the books, some cheap calls for 10, 12 cents in your back pocket. You've got to get through this fall, because if the Farmer Almanac's not right as having a normal October and we get a frost freeze, those computers are going to buy 24/7.
Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Time to get a final word from each of you, and I think, Kurt, that we'll begin with you for the day.
You know, we can put a man on the moon. We can shoot a missile in the ocean and send it through a kitchen window 1,000 miles away. We can take a picture up in outer space and see what you look like. I just don't understand why we can't add up acres.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons. And your final word, please.
That's tough to follow. That was a good one. But I would say that the producer needs to focus on marketing the remaining of his old crop. I think we're at levels right now where corn makes a lot of sense. Beans are a little more challenging, but the calendar is going to be ticking away from us. So get a plan in place and get offers in place prior to the August 12th crop report.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I like what Brian said. Have your plan in place. Have your offers out there, whether those are cash, futures, whether you're doing on paper, whether you're doing physical bushels, or ideally some combination of both to give you the most flexibility. When you look at this market, as we talked about earlier, there's two very differing viewpoints or two very differing spectrums of how this is going to end up in the end, and we may not know until the combines roll. The problem is, from a risk management standpoint and from someone who's got a lot of dollars on the line from a P&L perspective on their farm, we can't wait quite that long. So be sure you're using all the tools in your toolbox. Be sure you have conversations with your crop insurance agent, with your cash marketing team, as well as your brokerage and option futures and options team, to use those tools appropriately to give you the most flexibility as far as managing your risk but still maintaining some upside in this marketplace.
And Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities.
Well, back in 1993, we had a lot of water in a smaller area, but really was bad. We rallied early, we sold off, we dawdled into the fall, and then we made our rally. I think this is a repeat of 93. I think it's going to be awfully hard to hold your longs for the next two months. But I think when the combines roll, you're probably going to wish you were long.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to us online on demand anytime you'd like. Our panelists for the week have included Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, David Chatterton, he is with Strategic Farm Marketing, also in Champaign, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel is in Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson has joined us as well from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.